Chapter 9. No promises, no vows. We rode like a tempest, out of Fadena and into the rising winds. I'd lost 10 fucking nights in the Forest of Sorrows. The thin red thread between Dior and me stretched so thin it had finally snapped. But still we gave desperate chase in the direction I'd last felt her. Me upon brave Argent and Phoebe on Valia's beast. A prickly chocolat mare she dubbed Thorn. Our days were spent in the saddle, hooves thundering, trying to make up our lost ground. Our nights were freezing and all too long, hope fading further with every dawn as I reached out toward the girl I'd sworn to give all protecting, feeling nothing at all. East Osway had been wine country once, but now only hollowed farmsteads dotted these snow-struck valleys we galloped through. Dead vines clawed out of the earth like skeletal hands, barren as the plains of hell. The snow came blinding, a vast wall of dark cloud gathering to the north. Reaching a bleak rise on the sixth day, I searched behind us for signs of pursuit by Lachlan and the others. But Phoebe pointed through the howling snows, and the hammer blow fell, the first of two that would finally cost us everything. "Gabriel," she called. "Look!" I saw nothing at first, the weather too grim. But the wind shifted and swelled, and through a break in the flurries, I glimpsed them then. A column of dark figures, shuffling southward through a chill no mortal army would dare march in. Hope surged, the wild thought that we'd somehow managed to catch Dior after all. But it died just as swift as the snows parted further, and I saw the extent of their number. There were thousands of dead, marching like a cohort of mortal men, all in lockstep, left, right, left, right. A great wagon train came behind, filled with the doomed and the damned. And in the rhythmic tread of that grim procession, I knew at last what they were, what led them. "That's a wretched legion," I breathed, "under command of high-blooded Ironhearts." Phoebe frowned. "But they march like soldiers. The Ratans are a mindless mob." "The brains of the wretched decay with their bodies, but the Vos can still command what's left of their minds. There's a reason the Forever King has been so successful, Mademoiselle Phoebe. A reason why his legions now threaten the capital of the Empire itself." "But they're marching into Osway. Like you said, the Forever King is in the east." I lowered my spyglass, whispering through gritted fangs. "Dior is south." "Sweet Mother Moons, he's coming for her." A terrifying thought, too awful to savour long. It would have been task enough to save Dior from the Blackheart, but now it seemed two armies might stand between us and her. Hope fading with every mile, still we rode on, wasting yet more time skirting round the Vos column into the screaming winds. And the second blow fell then, the heartbreaker, stealing the very last of our hope. For while I'd vowed to fight my way out of the abyss to get back to Dior's side, it seemed that the abyss had heard me. And now it gave bloody answer. A storm, bearing down from the moon's throne, vast and black and boiling. It was a monster, set to devour all in its path, thundering across those mighty peaks as it came and falling upon us like the fury of God himself. And though Phoebe and I fought through that tempest for long and frozen hours more, in the end, in the bitter end, "Gabriel, we can't stay out here," Phoebe roared, frozen braids whipping about her face. "This storm will be the death of ye." My hands were near frozen on Argent's reins, teeth chattering as I spat reply. "I've taken baths colder than this. You just worry about yourself, mademoiselle." "Damn you, man. I know you love the girl, but you need good to her dead." Phoebe grabbed my arm, talons sinking through my sleeve. "There's a chateau west of here named Ravenspire. It's just off the Luddite River. We can make it if we ride hard now." If we stop, Lachlan and the others will be on us like scratch on a dockside doxy. Phoebe shook her head, shouting over those hateful winds.
They'll have to shelter from this shite too. We can bed down at the chateau, break as soon as the storm does.
I wanted to rage, to refuse, but I met those golden eyes, Phoebe's claws sinking just deep enough to pierce the fog of helpless fear and stubborn anger I'd shrouded myself in.
I swore to protect her too, Gabriel. We're nae leaving her.
I saw the lie just as clear as she did. We both knew what more delay must cost us. But with heavy tread and heavier hearts, still we turned westward, out of that storm's dreadful path. All was hungry thunder and bone-biting cold. The snows came sideways, clawing at our skin, our brave horses near dead afoot. But through the tempest, we finally made out a distant tower, etched in silhouette against the pulse of distant lightning. Ravenspire was a lonely keep atop a lonelier hill, guarding a lifeless stretch of river. The walls had been smashed like old clay, the gatehouse crushed to rubble by boulders the size of wagons. Blessedly, the keep itself was somewhat intact, and we found a safe enough space to hole up in against the weather. A small library upstairs, a long table, bedding stolen from the upper chambers. Wind hammered at the shutters, and all was deathly chill, but we lit a fire in the hearth with piles of old books, warm enough to banish death's cold hand. I set trip lines at the stairs, strung with pots and pans. In the corridor leading to our room, I spread a dusting of glass shards. Empty Sanctus files from my bandolier, crushed in one gloved fist. If attacked, we could fight in this bottleneck, retreat up another stair to the tower behind when pressed. But I hoped it had not come to that. 3 nights we sheltered in Ravenspire, that storm deepening every one. I kept vigil at the window, peering out through the rattling glass for any sign of my brethren, worrying about Ash, reaching into the dark for Dior over and over, hoping against hope. Nothing, I sighed. Phoebe glanced up from her seat by the hearth, brow raised as I slammed a fist into the wall. Cold rock sliced my knuckles, sweet pain momentarily swallowing my frustration and rage. The dusk dancer only shook her head, firelight glittering in her eyes.
Nay sure how puncheon walls will help. It's nay the brick's fault, Gabriel.
It's Lachlan's, I hissed. We lost too much time fucking about in those damned woods. And now this cursed storm.
It'll break soon. We'll be back after the flower, quick as silver.
But I shook my head then, cold dread in my belly as I spoke the fear that had been growing in me for nights now. I'm not sure we can catch her any more, Phoebe.
Well, we have to try. If they reach Dunmergen, we're done. The anvil of the wolf is the greatest fortress in Osway. It'd take a fucking army to get inside it.
I sighed then, dragged one hand through my hair.
Then maybe we should start thinking about finding ourselves a fucking army.
Phoebe looked around the room with those hunter's eyes, finally hooking a talon into her décolletage and peering inside.
None in here. You got one down your britches, or...
Didn't you tell Dior all the Highlands are gathering for winter moot soon?
Phoebe sobered then, scowling.
I did, but you can't be thinking of heading there. Only children of Fionn and all mothers might step into the Madeir Craith and live.
Dior is bound for the Black Heart's clutches, and the Voss have sent a legion of the dead on her tail. I'll take that risk, Phoebe.
Then you'll die for it. The folk of the Moon's Throne nurse a grudge like a beggar his beer. The Ordo Argent killed the Stormbringer, Gabriel. You show up to a sacred moot with naught but silver on your skin and a grin on your face. They'll wear you like a fucking cloak.
Well, you'd best do a damn fine job of vouching for me in that case.
Phoebe scowled, golden eyes agleam as she looked me over. You swore to give your last breath to keep that girl safe, I told her. Don't ask me to risk less, not after what I've given already.
I've not felt a trace of Dior for days. We've no chance to catch her before she reaches Dunmere again now, and she'll need an army to rescue her from it. So, when this storm breaks, I go to raise her one, with or without you.
You're a bloody madman,
the Dusk Dancer pouted, thoughtful, tossing another book onto the flames.
I could make the trek up there alone, though, I suppose. Plead our case.
Bullshit. I'm supposed to just sit here and pray.
I'm sure those silver brothers of yours will keep you entertained.
At the end of a rope, maybe. I scowled, muttering through clenched teeth. Bloody fools. 10 days they cost us. Xavier, I understand. He was always thick as pig shit. Probably lost that arm of his trying to find his penis for a piss. But Lachlan should know better.
The two of you seemed thick as thieves when we first met at Avalyn. But now he seems intent on seeing you hanged.
Not sure if you've noticed, but I've a gift for getting on people's bad side, Kit Kat. She chuckled, sharp teeth gleaming.
To that, I can attest. But come now, who is he to you? I know you call all Silver Saints brother, but that one seemed special.
He was, I replied, loading my pipe. He is.
Tell me a story then, Chevalier.
Phoebe glanced around our little room, tucking one braid behind a pointed ear.
Unless you can think of a better way to pass the time.
I sighed, peering into the crackling flames. Embers rising in the halls of memory. Blood and silver and steel. The first city we took in the Ossian campaigns was a port named Bayasite, I said softly. It was really just a beachhead for Toliev's main invasion, only a couple of high bloods and 100 thrall swords left guarding his back as he advanced into Oswey. By the Empress's decree, I led the attack. 19 years old I was, Isabella's favoured black lion. We hit them from the sea, striking at dawn. And though most of the Divok troops were the average sort of thrall, there was one among them who fought like a demon, strong as a high blood, even with the black sun in the sky. I met him on the walls, all set to end him, but as we clashed, I realised from the brand on his hand and the fangs in his mouth what he truly was. A pale blood, like me. Thralled into service to the untamed. I asked him who he was. He replied he was the child of Toliev, mortal son of the Priori Divok himself. And then he did his best to cut the head off my fucking shoulders.
But the Black Lion was the greatest sword who ever lived, Phoebe murmured.
I shrugged. So the minstrels sing. All I'll say is I took his best, but gave a little better, and in the end he lay on the bloody stone at the tip of my blade. He was the enemy, I knew it, son of the monster I'd been sent to Oswey to slay, but he was just a boy, 15 at most. I'd never known my kind to serve the enemy. I felt pity for him. So I spared his life. Phoebe gave a small nod of approval.
Mercy is nobility.
Lachlan didn't share the sentiment. He vowed he'd kill me when he got the chance. Toliev had raised him among the untamed where only the savage survive. Compassion was for the weak. Mercy for the coward. Apparently Nikita had started throwing Lockie into pits with starving wretched when he was only 10 years old, just to see who'd come out on top. When I told him that was torture, Lachlan called me a fool. He informed me his big brother had been teaching him to be strong, that his noble father loved him true, that the Divok were born to rule the endless night, Toliev its endless emperor. But he was only a child, raised in darkness and knowing no better. The father's sins are not the son's. I knew that better than most. But I refused to condemn him for them. Instead, I sat with him in his cage each night, reading scripture, showing kindness, trying to prove we weren't the enemy he'd been raised to see. He'd have none of it, of course. I shook my head, looking into the fire and back through the red mist of time. And then we liberated the slaughter farms at Triobaili. Lachlan had no idea what his kin had been doing there. And when I showed him the atrocities unleashed by the famille he'd been forced to care for, the briefest sliver of horror and hatred cut through that dark counterfeit of love. It was Lachlan who told us where his father might be found. It was he who showed us the path to the Crimson Glade where Toliev made camp. And though it was my blade that cut the priory down that day, the victory was Lockie's as well as mine. When Toliev died, the bond of blood was truly broken, and Lachlan saw what his life had been. He marched toward the nearest bonfire, plunging his left hand into the blaze, intent to burn it off, his father's mark besides. But I dragged him away, told him it wasn't his fault, offered him a path from darkness into light. 2 years we fought side by side through hellfire and blood. Lucky was more than apprentice. He was my little brother, the saint I loved and trusted most in all the world. I hung my head, running a thumb over the name on my fingers. And then he learned about Astrid and me. Oh, Moons, Phoebe's eyes narrowed. He told your brethren about the affair? I shook my head. If he had, it'd be easier to hate him. But honour was more important to Lockie than life, and he breathed not a word to anyone. But I could see the disappointment in his eyes when he looked at me after that, to know I'd broken the vows I'd taught him to hold so dear. He blamed Astrid for most of it, I think, still keen to keep me on the pedestal he'd built in his mind. But he warned me she would be my undoing, that God must punish us for our sin. I didn't listen. Such was my foolishness, my vanity. I looked out at the thundering night, sighing from my heart. I still wonder, you know, what might have come if I'd listened when Lachlan warned me. We'd not have been together, but at least Astrid would be alive. You kind of think that way, Phoebe said, lifting her head. Blood spilled is blood lost. Take solace in the joy you gave each other, and burn all else for Father Earth. I only scowled at that, staring out into the dark. With a sigh, Phoebe twisted to her feet, padding across the cold stone toward me. I could hear her heartbeat, smell the smoke in her hair and the fire in her veins. She sought my eyes, but I didn't meet her gaze. Mother Moons, you're such a shadow on ye, it might swallow the sun. Most would call it a shadow well earned, mademoiselle. Phoebe shook her head. I said it to the flower, I'll say it again, there's a solace to be found in sadness. And I understand why you'd think you deserve that dark. Easier to find refuge in drink, in rage, to say hell with it all and push everyone away. Because you think that cold is easier to live with than the pain that could come if you let the warmth back in, only to be burned again. But that's the fire that lets us know we're alive, Gabriel. I shook my head, two pale shadows now rising at my back. You can't fix a broken blade, Phoebe. But don't you see? We don't get broken. We're made broken. We are not whole alone. But if we're blessed, if we're brave, we might find those few whose edges fit against our own. Like pieces of the same puzzle or shards of the same shattered blade. Those people who, in their own broken way, make our broken edge complete. I could smell the perfume of Silver Bell on the air now, the shadows growing deeper at my back, the echo of my promise to the ground ringing in my mind as I hung my head. But Phoebe pressed clawed hands to my cheeks, forced me to look at her. I am nay the one to unbreak you, Gabriel de Leon. I am nay green maid to swear troth to a man I barely know. I am the wild. I am the wind. I am thorn and bramble, blood and scars, and I do not love ye. But I ask ye for nay promise, and make nay vow save this. I am here. I am warm. And tomorrow, the whole world might be swallowed by winter. Phoebe leaned in, lips brushing mine, but heart thundering, I drew away. Don't, I whispered. Don't touch me. She looked up into my eyes. firelight smouldering on molten gold.
All right, I won't touch you.
Stepping back, she reached behind her, loosed the stays on her gown. A part of me wanted to turn away, another to warn her, but most of me was helpless but to watch as with a shrug, she shed that silken skin. Her dress tumbled in emerald waves onto the flagstones at her feet, leaving me undone at a single stroke. Phoebe slipped her hands behind her, wrists crossed at the small of her back, fixing me with golden eyes.
But you can touch me, if you want.
My eyes drank her in, the song of her curves, the smattering of freckles, the tattoos and scars. I felt my blood racing, my breath quicken, and though those shadows about me pressed down like gossamer and lead, still I found myself taking one halting step toward her. But she took one step back.
Do you want?
She whispered. I stepped nearer, legs shaking like a newborn fowl's, but again she stepped away.
Say it.
I'd no wish to be burned again. Yet a part of me longed to feel that flame, if only for a moment. Fiona's warning about heeding the music, about holding on to what I could while I could, rang now in my mind. And though the shadows pressed ever like tons upon my back, still I fancied amid the scent of Silver Bell and that soul-sick ache of loss, I heard my love whisper to me, as once she'd done in days fine and far from here. Hearts only bruise, they never break. I looked at Phoebe, bare and brave and beautiful, that song of scars upon her skin. My lips parted ash dry and hungry, and finally I spoke a truth I never thought I'd say. I want. And then she was in my arms, crashing against me with all the fury and hunger of the tempest outside. Her kiss was fierce, burning, but true to her word, she kept her hands behind her back as if bound there, refusing to touch me, leaving me to touch her. I was fumbling, uncertain, the first woman I'd known in an age pressed up against me. Her body was an untamed realm, wild and beautiful, and I was aflame with the need to know every inch, to let my lips light fires among those hills and valleys, to brave the dangers of her darkest places. But I knew I must be careful of my silvered touch, and so I forced myself to trace her shape. A slow, torturous dance with just the very tips of my fingers, drawing long, careful spirals on her prickling skin as our kiss ever deepened. I caressed the long, milk-pale path of her throat, that pulse calling my name down over the arches of her collarbones to her breasts. Her heart thundered beneath my hands, her sighs stirring long-forgotten butterflies in my belly. Her breath catching as I stroked, gasping as I pinched, feeling her tremble as she groaned into my mouth. Phoebe stepped back again, and I followed, iron to starstone now. She bumped against the table, wrists still crossed behind her, lifting herself up and wrapping her legs tight around my waist. My breeches were straining as we ground against each other, as my mouth slipped over the line of her jaw. Her scent was purest madness, flaming tresses spilling down her spine as her head drifted back. My hands caressed her ass, and my kisses roamed her neck, that forbidden hymn thrumming beneath her skin. My fangs had grown long and hard in my gums, and I dared not linger for fear of what I might do next, my mouth following her tattoos ever lower, taking one pebble-hard nipple into my mouth, licking, teasing. My fingers traced lines of fire up the inside of her thighs, and she hissed at the touch of the silver on my palm, shivering as she felt the brush of ivory needles on her skin.
God, I have to taste you, I whispered. I want you to, she breathed.
She pressed me tighter to her breast, and I understood then what she spoke of.
The kiss. She wanted to feel it, I realized, to drown in the bliss it promised, to soar and burn among those dark red heavens. But though my thirst roared and bucked like a wild thing at the thought, I dared not succumb, sinking lower instead.
Phoebe relented with a sigh, legs parting wider as my kisses descended, blood-red spirals leading me ever closer, goosebumps rising as I sank to my knees and into the silken heaven awaiting.
Oh, moons!
She melted as she felt my tongue flicker against her, sinking back on the table, spine arching and mouth wide. Her taste was fire and autumn's rust, honey and salt. My fingertips still roaming her skin as my tongue wrote poetry on her petals, fluttering on her swollen bud as she groaned and pleaded more, goddesses, more. I sang a song on her as old as time, wanting only to hear her sing in turn. Tension was writ in her every corded muscle, every tiny gasp, her legs rising up now, toes curling as her claws sank deep into the wood. She began to buck, to beg, undone by my touch, my tongue. And as she shattered, at last she broke her word, raking talons through my hair, fierce enough to draw blood. A cry ripped up and out of her as she went taut as a bowstring, and her shapeless scream instead became my name. I smiled, reveling at that song. But I'd only a moment to savour her little earthquake before those claws sank into my shoulders and she hissed with all hell's hunger, "Moons, get up here!" And as Phoebe dragged me up her body, lunging toward me now, our mouths collided with such force her lips split open on my fangs. Blood. I reared back, gasping as it crashed upon me. A single drop of fire from her veins mingled with the honey from her quim upon my tingling tongue. Blood! God, it was ecstasy. It was agony. Salvation and damnation entwined, racing in lines of white-hot fire straight down to my nethers. The thirst in me roared, and it was all I could do not to grab a fistful of her curls and wrench her head back as she tore my belt loose, dragging me free from my breeches and sinking her talons into my hips. "Fuck me," she demanded. "Now!" All was fire. All was want. Phoebe's legs cinched about me as she pressed my aching cock against her lips. Heaven, just one surrender, one thrust, one bite away. The want was deeper than any ocean, stronger than any vow to dive, drink, devour. But above her ragged breath, the primal scream of that animal within me, I heard it. Faint beneath the storm, but still, enough to plunge a dagger of ice right through my belly. I drew away from Phoebe's mouth, and she moaned and sought my kiss again, claws sinking deeper into my skin. "Moons, Gabriel, fuck me!" "Stop," I gasped. "Listen." And there it came again. Unmistakable. Unbelievable. The sound of crunching glass. High in the reaches of a black tower in Souladère, Jean-François of the Blood Chastain, historian of Her Grace Margot Chastain, thumped his hands on the tome in his lap. "Are you bloody jesting?" The last silver saint sipped his goblet of wine, eyebrow raised. "Eh? Reds then?" the historian demanded. "You are not toying with me for your own sadistic amusement? Your enemies chose that exact moment to rear their idiot heads." "Their timing could have been better," Gabriel shrugged. "Could have been far worse." "Great Redeemer!" the vampire cried, kicking back in his chair and searching the ceiling for patience. The monster finally found his calm, drummed fingers upon the page as he met the Silver Saint's eyes. "Tell me you made them suffer for the interruption, at least." "No fear on that front, cold blood." Gabriel shook his head, looking down at his tattooed hands. "There'd be plenty of suffering to go around."